Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm John Cena.
Hey, it's professional wrestler Colt.
Boom Boom Cabana.
Hey, I'm Double J, Jeff Jarrett.
And this is Rich Swann.
Matt Riddle, the King of Rose.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Do it, bro.
Support Ali. Support Luke. Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Home of Luke Owen. Whatever WrestleTalk is and whoever Luke Owen is. Quote the Raven. Nevermore.
WrestleTalk. Rumble. No one's live.
Hello and welcome to the WrestleTalk podcast. I'm Mr. Davis and I'm joined by lukewarm Luke Owen.
Hello, Swaff Nation, and a hello to you, Mr. Davis. How the devil are you?
Oh, man. You know how I was really cocky about Blue Monday not affecting me and I was on a run and then the Hobbs went down and then I just feel like everything's going wrong at the moment.
Oh, no. What else is going wrong in your life?
I don't know. I actually can't outline specifically one single thing. If anything, everything's okay. I just feel like I'm in a rut. And I said it. I freaking said this on Saturday. I stood back in the kitchen after we prepared a pretty nice breakfast that day. And I said to my lady partner, I know this is going to come back to bite me, but things are going pretty well for us right now.
Do you think it's a case of you're just bored of lockdown now? Like, because my wife and I were having this conversation last night. We were watching Best Home Cook, Celebrity Best Home Cook, which, by the way, absolutely terrific show. Just loving it currently.
I think the final round where it's all done blind is a genius move.
So good, right? It's great.
You can't take into account the rest of the series and how they act. It's a really smart, fair way of doing it, I think.
Yeah, controversially, I think it's better than Bake Off.
You just love to be a contrarian sometimes, don't you?
It's not been a contrarian. I just think it's better than Bake Off.
Let that get the dead air it deserves.
But yeah, my wife and I were just having a chat last night. We were watching the interior designer show as well with Alan Carr. And we were just like, do you know what? I'm bored of it now. Like I'm pretty much just done with it. I've been working the whole time. I've been, you know, very fortunate in the fact that I've constantly had work throughout this. Very fortunate in the fact that my wife has also had work throughout all of this. We have never gone hungry. We have never struggled to, like, you know, financially or anything like that. People have had it way worse off than we have done. However, I'm now bored. And it's got to the point now where the weekend is essentially just a really long lunch break.
Yeah. It's all so similar.
Yeah. And I'm just wondering if that's why you're sort of feeling a bit down. Because like my wife was saying she was feeling a bit down today. She was like, I feel just a bit blue. I feel like a bit, it's like a ball of wool that's just been pulled ever so slightly. So it's just a bit frayed around the edges. Nothing's wrong. I just feel a bit, don't know.
Yeah, just need a change of scenery. But there's no end in sight. What a cheery open to this. You know what? AEW genuinely is a little island of escapism at a weekly time slot. I love, love, love it. And I'm very grateful for that company's existence. It would be pretty bleak if they weren't around to get a lot of, you know, wrestling fans like us through lockdown.
Well, we did actually have an email in on the subject of your troubles and strifes that said, yo, Luke and Ollie, Texiv Native here. Quick question. What the F is a hob? Is it the same thing as a stovetop, a.k.a. a burner? Context clues from the Raw Review end segment would imply that a hob is more like a countertop appliance, similar to a blender or microwave. But your description is very similar to the burners on a stovetop, of which there are four built into the top of the surface of the oven. I realized that I could easily just Google this, but I never did it the easy way. Keep up the consistency. Jam that hole. Yes, please. P.S. Courtney Love's band, Hole, plan to reunite and perform Nia Jax's entrance theme live on the ramp of WrestleMania. Brandon Powell.
That has to happen, Brandon. All the whole references. Maybe they'll do a screen. The Titantron will be of the... Was it a Joe Dante movie called Holes?
Oh, I know which one you mean. Yeah,
I mean? Mm-hmm. If it wasn't directed by Joe Dante, it might as well have been. You are correct. And this, I appreciate the roundabout way of Googling something you've had, and that is to, instead of just type it into a search bar, email in a podcast, get them to answer it for you. Yeah, it's a stove top. But because I think I told Luke this off air, when I searched Amazon for replacement hobs, I got, you know, stove top, Fast and Furious DVD, Luke Hobbs, Hobbs and Shaw. And then it was stove top, The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey. I was like, good God, I don't want to make that mistake.
Not again. Yes, so I hope that answers your question. It should do. Anyway, that's all we've got for now. Now it's time to go into the main show itself. Talking about AEW, cracking show. Here it is.
Last night's episode of AEW Dynamite might not have been the most spectacular they've had in the last 3 months, because my God, they've had quite a few amazing TV specials. But I will argue that this was the closest we've got to the AEW Attitude Era on this show. We had a no sell of a kidnapping. We had Darby Allin in a body bag, towed around a car park by a car, shades of Big Boss Man and the Big Show feud, and an epic main event where they brawled all around the stadium into the kitchen area, loads of insane moves through tables and little bits of stages and run-ins and overbooked fun and potatoes. I'm Mr. Davis. I'm joined by Lukewarm Luke Cohen.
Was it spudtacular?
It was top spud stuff.
Oh, it was so, and like, you were right. I was kind of the one who said, like, God, that match really did feel like an Attitude Era style match. And not just because it was this wild, like, it wasn't just a crazy brawl. We've seen brawls. Like, you know, when AEW first started, they had that wall between the Elite and the Inner Circle. Do you remember this? Like, when they were brawling around, like, the popcorn vendors and things like that. Like, you know, that was a wild brawl. This was like, they brawl to one area, they do some fighting there, then they brawled into a kitchen area. Honestly, it felt like I was playing a video game. And we've just reviewed St. Valentine's Day Massacre for the Patreon. And in that, you've got the hardcore match between Bob Holly and Al Snow, where they're kind of like, they start brawling through the crowd, and then they brawl into the backstage, and then they brawl outside the building, and then they brawl down to the Mississippi River, and then they fall into the Mississippi River. And then it's like just crazy nonsense stuff. That's what this felt like. This felt like an Attitude Era hardcore match, but it also had the Attitude Era star power. The thing that everyone talks about when they talk about how good the Attitude Era was, it wasn't the quality of the matches, it was the star power involved. And when this match started, like, Kenta made his entrance, and I was like, it's so crazy seeing Kenta here. Like, that's nuts. And then all of a sudden, Kenny Omega comes out, and I'm like, oh my God, like, Kenny Omega's here as well. This is so cool. Lance Archer comes out, and you're like, man, this has got some... This is a big dude. Look, Jake the Snake Roberts is there. And then Moxley's music hits. And my first note I've written here is like, this is nuts. Good Lord, everything about this feels big time. And it's like, and I just loved it. Loved it, loved it, loved it.
And by the end of the match, the Good Brothers come in. There's the evil tag team to help the heels win. There's sort of the... Look, St. Valentine's Day Massacre, 1999, McMahon, Austin, the Ministry, the Corporation. These things are fresh in mine and Luke's memory. So maybe we are just having a bit of recency bias in what we're seeing on AEW Dynamite and what we've just reviewed for Patreon, which will go up tomorrow, Wrestle Talk Extra.
It's going up tomorrow, in fact, yes.
How's that for a plug? But it's like AEW, like you said, have done these things before, where not just with that initial brawl when it was the Elite feuding with the Inner Circle, but that amazing street fight between Santana and Ortiz and Best Friends. And I really, really like that Butcher, Blade and Young Bucks match as well, you know, where there was sort of a Falls Count Anywhere. But it was just top to bottom, this entire show that, like, the Attitude Era in WWE, WWF back then, was star power, crazy storylines. That's what it was. You know, Austin, Rock, Undertaker, Kane, Mr. McMahon, Mick Foley as Mankind. Like, this crazy concentration of star power, and those wrestlers were booked to get over hard. They were protected. It was just a brilliant combination of people. But the storylines, as exciting as they were, didn't make a lick of sense if you followed them week to week. And the in-ring matches, by and large, were really, really bad. What AEW has here is a fantastic sort of medium level of in-ring action, particularly in that, like, the main event stuff was insane. I thought the opener was excellent too, as was the women's match. Plenty of other things going on. But the storylines are so coherent. It's like a coherent version of the Attitude Era. It's like whatever fueled those booking meetings back in the Attitude Era, here it's water, comic books, and coffee.
Yeah, it was like, I loved this brawl. I loved this fight. Like, John Moxley literally potatoed Kenny Omega at one point. Like, you love to see it. And you have,
well, you've got to explain what that is, because okay, we haven't discussed the spot.
So, so they're brawling through like this kitchen area, and Moxley and Kenta are like fighting on top of these. I would argue, probably, I would have rethought this spot, because what they were fighting on were like tables on wheels, and there was three of these tables on wheels, and the referee has only got two hands, so he's trying to steady two hands and use the third one to see, because, and then Kenta hits the DDT, and all of a sudden they basically just split apart, because of course they were going to. What were you thinking? But in all of this, Moxley then grabs a potato, an actual potato, because they're in a kitchen, and he hit Kenny Omega with it. He literally potatoed him. I laughed out loud. It was so funny, because we all laugh, we're wrestling fans, and then you've got JR going like, he literally potatoed him. I'm like, thanks, Jim. Thanks to be there to explain the joke for us all.
It was, but it's quite a rare thing, and there was a lot of spots like this where it's, the hardcore element is so zany, it's veering into the comedic or the buffoonery, which, yes, you know, certain commentators very much dislike. However, I thought they struck the balance perfectly, because I never thought, even with that potato spot, I think it was Lance Archer who first emptied the bin of potatoes onto Kenny Omega, and then, of course, Moxley followed up with the potato punch. Like, I never thought, this is a comedic spot. I just thought, yeah, freaking more violence, hit each other with stuff. So it played perfectly seriously. And it was just so exciting as a main event.
Yeah. And it, like, they brawl back into the arena again, and they're brawling up onto the stage. Kenny and like Moxley had this wicked, like, you know, series of moves and stuff. And it ends up with Moxley being put onto the table at ringside. And then you cut upwards, and Kenta and Lance Archer brawl out of the entranceway. So you kind of got like these two forces of just battle from different sides of the arena. And they do a little bit. Archer like teases putting Kenta through the announce table, and Kenta escapes. And then, rather than attacking Archer, runs and does this diving footstop off the stage onto Kenny Omega. Did you see? You seen Austin Gunn on Twitter? He filmed it on his phone in slow motion using the slow mo feature. So you see, like, Kenta's just going like, and like the full like slow motion thing. And at the end of it, it just pans over, and there's just Kenny Omega going like this. It was so good.
What I liked about that spot, of course, the spot itself, but Kenta was about to go through the announcer's table, and as that was being set up, I thought, have I ever seen anyone go through the AEW announcer's desk? Have you?
So maybe not since the COVID era. Maybe it must have happened. Has it happened? It must have happened at some point, surely.
But you think of all the times people go through announcers' tables, and I thought, oh, actually, this is quite a protected feature in AEW. People get pushed around there if someone's on guest commentary, or the timekeeping area gets the crap kicked out of it. At least once a show, someone goes there. Yeah.
It's the Spanish announce table of AEW.
But there were so many other amazing spots in this. Like Kenny Omega got a trash can. He put the trash can over the ring post in the corner, hit the You Cannot Escape on Jon Moxley, I believe it was, but in so doing, picked up the trash can from the corner and moonsaulted with it. It was just perfect action.
And I loved Callis on commentary in all of this. I always adore Callis on commentary, commentary on Camus. And he was like, he gets over character so well in all of this. You know, like I was talking about how like MVP was amazing on the commentary on Raw when he was like putting over both guys in the ring, but also putting over his guy. And I felt that like Callis was doing that. And there's one point during this, the start, where Excalibur goes, God, you look at Kenta in there, and it's hard to believe we're seeing Kenta in an AEW ring. And Don Callis goes, I can believe it. I've been planning this for 4 years. And it was just like, just getting over that story and getting over his character. And have you seen the press conference that they did?
Oh, I haven't, no.
So they did like a press conference, like a mock press conference thing with Callis, the Good Brothers, and Kenny Omega. And like this reporter asks a question and they're like, no, I'm not answering this. We're leaving. And then the guy's like, no. I just want to ask one more question. Do you have any response to comments that have been made by Jay White, Tama Tonga, and Tonga Loa? And like they sort of literally put off being like, who are those guys? I'm not sure. Oh, those are the other guys. And he has this line where he's like, look, we're all fighting for each other. What I want everyone to do is to go and buy Bullet Club merchandise. Let's try and get them back into the top 20 of pro wrestling tees. Oh. I know we can all do it together. And he's like, good, the Good Brothers and Kenny, they left Bullet Club, and that allowed this mid-card to make themselves into main eventers. So actually, it was a good thing that we left, but now we're all back together, so it's all great and stuff.
Crap in heck. I even want to see the heels fight heels. The whole storyline is so engaging. At the end of the match, after some surprising Jake the Snake Roberts physical involvement, he short-armed clotheslined Carl Anderson. I think when Jake the Snake goes to get physical with someone, you just want it to be like a straight-up punch or something, right? Not a little twirl and a short-arm pull into a lariat.
I can do the Mainbreaker too, kid.
So it'll be doing like double axe handles off the top next. But that was cool. But he got beaten up. They were going to tease that they were going to do it more. But Archer came in. It took all four guys beating down Archer to pin him with a sort of assisted one-winged angel at the end. But yeah, so, you know, Kenta and Omega at the start clashed with each other because they both wanted to get at Moxley. But by the end, they were working together. Yeah, so I guess the Bullet Club are kind of on the same page, but there is definite infighting there still. What I would say as a criticism, and to further your point on star power, obviously Kenny Omega, Moxley, Archer, they have star power. I've got to admit, if I wasn't familiar with Kenta from New Japan, as you've got to assume the vast majority of TNT viewers are for Dynamite, you know, just looking at the numbers of New Japan subscriptions, etc., there's not much of a crossover there, although there is a vocal one. Kenta was very poorly built up in this, as was the IWGP US Championship. Moxley's suddenly got a belt. They didn't, where was the video package? Where was the explanation promo about Kenta? Why isn't someone sitting down explaining who he is with some New Japan footage, recapping the feud with Moxley, not just on commentary, but as like a proper thing?
Yeah, and I think we can, you know, make this argument as well with FTR. Like when FTR debuted, there were a lot of people who'd only seen FTR as the revival on the main roster. They hadn't seen any of their amazing stuff they did in NXT. So when FTR came in, there was almost like this, like, okay, it's time to prove me wrong then. Almost like, rather than them being like, we're going to go back there and make it be amazing. It was more like some fans had the aspect of like, well, now it's time for you to show me why you're apparently so good. And the first match they had was fine. And we both said, like, it's not like the most amazing in-ring AEW debut for them. Obviously, they've then gone on to have like five-star and six-star classics and whatnot like that. But that first match is always going to stay with people. And I think you can make the same argument with Kenta here, which is that, yeah, this match was amazing, but this match wasn't designed to make Kenta look amazing. It wasn't like, if you've only seen his WWE stuff, then you're not going to watch this and be like, I'm not sure why everyone's that mad about him, aside from the fact it was a really fun match. I would totally get as a criticism.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, it's Luke Owen here from the WrestleTalk podcast, just letting you know that the video versions of the WrestleTalk podcast is now on a new and exclusive home. If you've been watching the WrestleTalk podcast video version for the last 4 years, you'll have known it was on WrestleTalk, but because of YouTube algorithms and uploads and blah, blah, views, etc., etc., we've been instructed by some very, very smart, intelligent algorithm boffins that our uploads are kind of like they're butchering some of the plays. So what we've done is we've now moved the WrestleTalk podcast off of WrestleTalk and are putting it on an exclusive YouTube home, WrestleTalk podcast. Nothing else is changing. You're still going to get your pay-per-view reviews, Raw, AEW, SmackDown, the magazine show with myself and Denise. If you do watch the video version of these podcasts, by the time Elimination Chamber rolls around, it will only be available to find on the WrestleTalk podcast channel. Don't go to WrestleTalk. You'll only find the WrestleTalk news there. WrestleTalk podcast channel. But if you just search WrestleTalk podcast, you should still be able to find it. That's all from me. Thanks, everyone. Enjoy the rest of the show.
Let's see what you guys think in the Omega chats. Go over to wrestletalk.com/support to get your Omega chats in. We'll read out every single one of them before the end of the show. Luke Retallick says John Moxley has the stiffest potato shot.
Stiffest. He is the stiffest.
Stuff my hole. Jobber JJ 496. Hello, lads. Not an Ultra chat or a Omega chat, but a potato. I don't understand the pun.
He said potato, and there was the potato in the match. So,
where's the chat? He's talking about different kinds of chats. The potato chats?
There you go, potato chat.
Mika Pellegrini, Omega and Mox has been a storyline since May 2019. 21 months ago, and it is easily one of the hottest stories in wrestling. Amazing stuff from AEW. Storytelling done right. My only problem is in AEW, I don't know who Kenta is or any of the non-AEW stars.
Yeah, it's absolutely. That's exactly it. Yeah, you cannot make these shows with the assumption that people are watching everything. We've actually said this before with WWE, like in the olden days, but like when they used to bring up people from NXT, they would often just bring them up with the exact same gimmick. Emma's the one that I always come back to as a great example of this. Emma's dancing gimmick, where she was just doing the crazy dance, got over massively in NXT. So they just transported it straight to the main roster, and they were like, cool, now everyone else do it. And there were a lot of people, like I would say 90% of the people, because NXT wasn't the watched NXT that it is now. It was the really no one is really watching NXT. It was just like about 30 people, this rabid hardcore audience for it. And all of a sudden, the large majority of them watched it and been like, the hell is this dancing gimmick? Like, this is rubbish. This is stupid. But if you'd done video packages showing how it got over in NXT, then it might have transposed into the main roster. And I completely agree here. You cannot expect everyone is watching New Japan or Impact. You have got to kind of like, you've got to tell these stories through video packages and interviews.
Nate S says, Mox doing his best Shane McMahon impression. Love this episode, especially this match. Cannot wait to see where this story goes from here. I think you've seen the post-show interview with Don Kenny, good bros talking about Bullet Club. Don is excellent. Yes, yeah, we already covered that.
Someone actually got one of the lines that I missed that really made me laugh. Ah, there it is. Yeah, which is like, those are the guys not making money, right? It was Kenny's line about the other Bullet Club.
And Bo Hill, finally for now, I am so glad for everyone, especially him, that Kenta now has a chance to change his legacy in the US, and he hopefully won't be remembered as Hideo Itami, but as the insanely talented wrestler he actually is. And Jesus Christ, that double stomp onto Mox.
That was so good. Poor table did not break, though, so Ken yeah. Mox just took the full brunt of it.
It was the Japanese table that followed Kenta into the arena. Well, it's Thursday. You know what that means? It's the play-by-play Dynamite review. It opened with Darby Allin versus Joey Janela for that TNT Championship match, where last week they had a segment where Team Taz are like, we're going to be there. And Sting was like, I'm going to be there too. And neither of them were there. None of them were there, which, you know, was weird. But I really liked this match. I was expecting a total hardcore, dangerous style sort of story for this match because of the history of both guys, Allin and Janela. They're like deathmatch wrestlers extraordinaire. But what we got was a really, really nice in-ring match, really decently worked, great story. Joey's a bit bigger. He used his muscle to get over Allin. Allin focused on Janela's arm. And in the end, it was, you know, they didn't use any weapons. It was, if anything, they used the ropes as weapons, sort of kicking the rope into each other's faces at points. But Darby Allin won with an avalanche code red off the second turnbuckle. That's where we're at with Allin. That is a restrained move for Darby Allin, hitting a code red off the second rope. And then he tucks Janela's arm, the one he's been working over, under his body and then hits the coffin drop onto him. I thought that was such a nice finish. I really like this match. Allin retains.
Yeah, really liked it as well. I think if I'm to be hypercritical about this, because the story that was set up on last week's show was that Team Taz were going to interfere and Sting was going to be there to stop them, I would have had Sting in Darby's corner, basically just like, you know, to be the enforcer, to be out there, to be like, you know, just stand there with the baseball bat, don't get involved in the match, just be out there to watch and to make sure that Team Taz don't interfere. Then after the match, you can have the Tony Schiavone interview segment and Darby can leave and walk to the back. And that's when you then do the Team Taz thing where they capture him, they drag him in the body bag because the story doesn't quite connect itself with what was set up last week into this match and then the following segments after, whereas it could have been tied together a bit nicer. However, the one thing I really, really enjoyed about this is that there was no interference. This was a clean match with a clean finish, and that is always going to get a big thumbs up in my book.
Yeah, we'll talk about the Sting stuff shortly when that comes up, because that happened a bit later. Mox cuts a great promo holding his IWGP United States title. I popped huge for seeing the New Japan Championship over his shoulder. But at the same time, this is what we talked about earlier, it's going to be highly confusing to people who don't know what a New Japan is, which you've got to assume is everybody. Because what is it, Luke? Everyone's issue?
Oh, it's the Stan Lee comment. So Stan Lee always used to say that everyone's first comic. Oh no, every comic is someone's first comic book. So you've got to treat every comic book like it's someone's first issue they've ever read. You can't just assume that everyone has read everything that has come beforehand. So yeah, so I think you should also do that with this. Do you remember, like, remember when they first started and they were using like the AAA tag titles for like Double or Nothing and All Out, and there were a lot of people who have been like, guys, don't just randomly bring in belts, because it is going to confuse some audience, because they haven't been used those belts on TV since. Like, Omega's not carrying around the AAA Mega Championship, even though he is the champion. You have got to pick your spots on when you're carrying these belts around.
Definitely. After that, we got Sammy Guevara going to confront MJF. This was after the bit last week where the Inner Circle, like, Sammy stormed off because he didn't like what MJF was doing. Jericho went after him and the door closed as MJF was going to have a private word with the rest of the Inner Circle members. So this was following on from them. Sammy brings in the cameraman because he's like, I want you to record this and see this. I like how they get over that. There's a reason for the cameraman there to be filming these segments, these private moments between two wrestlers. Adds a lot to the believability. But Sammy says, look, I know you're trying to take over the Inner Circle. MJF gaslit Sammy back, saying, what are you talking about? It's all in your head. And then he effectively gets Sammy to say, I hate Chris Jericho. I want to take over the Inner Circle for myself. And MJF's like recorded this on his phone. He says, I've got what I wanted. And Sammy goes, what are you talking about? No, you can't record me saying that. And he grabs the phone, smashes it against the wall and punches MJF in the gut.
It did work, aside from the fact the cameraman was also there. So the cameraman was also recording that. So it doesn't fully work. It's sort of,
well, because I've heard this criticism a lot. And in my head, that MJF's plan wasn't to use the sound recording. MJF, like, look back over the last couple of months, how subtly he's played it in every segment, even segments like when no one's supposed to be watching, he's still like, he plays it sincerely. So why would he then really over the top go, well, that's what I wanted to hear? Well, stop recording. I'm walking off with my phone now. It's so obvious that MJF was laying a trap for Sammy to smash his phone and punch him in the gut. And that's on camera. That's on camera. And now MJF can show Jericho that footage.
Yeah.
That makes total sense to me.
That does make total sense. I will admit on that one, I was wrong. I think you've actually completely nailed that. I'm going to hold my hands up on that one. I was wrong on that. I think you've totally nailed it. I loved it later on when Sammy said, like, you know, when Sammy quits the Inner Circle following the match, this smirk on MJF's face. It's only like a couple of frames where he just sort of goes, got it right. Like, I got what I wanted. And then he just goes, Chris, oh no, he's quit.
Chris Jericho has pointed out in the past that he watches Dynamite. You know, so he is aware of the segments that he's not a part of. So I appreciated this. Next up, we got Cody Rhodes and Lee Johnson, who has a long losing streak on Dark, getting a sort of Dynamite debut, versus Peter Avalon and Cesar Bononi, who used to be in NXT, really big Brazilian guy. Great look. And they had a tag match. Apparently, Cody got injured during this. He sort of tweaked his shoulder. The report is from AEW themselves that he's got a partially torn rotator cuff, which could be pretty serious if he's expected to do the bulk of the work in that match with the celebrity, the other person who's never wrestled, and the very green Red Velvet. He was sort of meant to be the ring general there.
And let's not forget that person who hasn't had a lot of matches underneath her belt is there because the person who was originally supposed to be in that match is no longer in that match. Like, I don't think you want to have then another replacement in the match.
But this sort of set up Johnson to win. And he got the one. And I It was really nice to see him win. I'm not that familiar with the guy. I haven't seen much of him on Dark. What I have, he had the Ben Carter match, which was phenomenal. And he looks really good. But, and he put this out like he was crying that he got this, this tag team win. And then at the top of the ramp, Tony interviews him. AW put it over huge. And he thanks everyone. He feels like he's part of the Rhodes family. Dustin, Brandy, Arn. And QT Marshall is just standing right behind him. Great little bit of character work there. There's got to be a feud bubbling away there.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Yeah, a lot of people said, like, oh, I hope you spotted QT Marshall's like reaction to the Johnson promo. What I really liked about this is that this wasn't Johnson getting worked over by the heels to lead to a Cody hot tag. It was Cody getting worked over to lead to the Johnson hot tag so that he could run wild. Like, all of the shine was given to this kid that they're, you know, they're grooming to be a potential top star in the company, which is what AEW are doing a lot of at the moment. AEW was essentially a mix of WWE's main roster and NXT, where they're having like your established stars who are putting on storylines, but also here's some up and coming talent that we're trying to make into future stars. And they're just going to be mixing it up with all of our current talents that we've got as well. Like, this felt like Cody had gone to NXT to work with some of the NXT boys. Because it was like, you know, and Peter Avalon, you know, and the same thing with Cesar Bononi. And I really, really liked that about this. I know some people are kind of like a bit critical of Cody because he's always putting himself over, or like he works too much and then he's, you know, going to be a bit injury prone. But I kind of think this is one of those examples that you can show that Cody is never doing anything just for himself. He is only ever doing things for the best of the company.
There was another interesting wrinkle to this. At the start of the match, before it got underway, Cody went over to Arn Anderson's son at ringside. Arn Anderson's son, who appears to be about 5 years younger than Arn Anderson. He's just, you know, like how I think Arn Anderson came out of the womb fully formed as today Arn Anderson. And his son seems exactly the same. That sort of just like, just tough looking badass. And he shakes his hand and they put over, look, that's Arn's son. He's training to be a wrestler right now. Part of the Nightmare family, presumably. Recruit number 1,267. And this comes just a few days after Arn Anderson's podcast, where he spoke about being very excited for a future plan where he's going to manage a new tag team. And I look at this segment and I think, is it Johnson and his son?
Hey, do you know what? It could be. Yeah, it might. Yeah, might be onto something there. I mean, yeah, he looks awesome. This Brock Anderson kid, like, just like, not like as a wrestler, but just like you said, like Arn Anderson. He looks exactly like Arn Anderson, basically. So I'm excited to see what they're going to do with him, actually, and see what this does lead to with him or with Arn Anderson. And yeah, well, I'm stoked for it, man.
After this, we got a backstage segment where the Bucks sort of confronted the Good Brothers in an interview segment with Dasha Fuentes, and they were sort of disagreeing over the Battle Royal last week to decide the number one contenders. And the Bucks were like, we were going to pick you if we won. Why did you throw us out? And the Good Brothers, you know, perfectly reasonably explained, hey, our beef was with Private Party. We got rid of them. That's not on us if you got distracted. So they sort of patched things up. But then the Bucks said, well, we're getting a bit angsty. Let's defend our tag team championships next week. Let's do it against Santana and Ortiz, because the idea was Santana and Ortiz disrespected them during the match. Did they do the Young Bucks pose? Good Brothers riled them up to do. So now we're in a position. I didn't like this. We're in a position now where a team that lost the Battle Royal the previous week is getting a title shot 2 weeks after. But, you know, maybe you could. It should not. It shouldn't be for the title, but it is what it is. What annoys me more is that the Inner Circle had that match to decide the official tag team of the Inner Circle, and it's Jericho and MJF.
Yeah, I mean, that was going to be my point on this, was they had that match, the Tornado, the Triple Threats tag team match, to decide who was going to be the official team of Inner Circle. Then the following week, all three of those teams were in the Battle Royal where they could become the number one contenders for the pay-per-view. And then the following week after that, one of those teams that didn't win are getting a title shot. So what was the point of the match then? What was the point of the original match?
Yeah, I don't know. And I get it from a story perspective where you beat the lesser tag team in the Inner Circle to go on to then have the title match at Revolution against Jericho and MJF. But it maybe it should never have been billed as the official tag team of the Inner Circle. It should just be the top dog tag team in the Inner Circle.
Mm. Yeah. Because I know that Santana and Ortiz, I'm pretty sure they were given this title shot because of the ranking system. And I think they're the ranked number one team or something. So that's why the Bucks picked them out. But also at the same time, then if they're the official team, why are they part of the rank? I think it adds a lot of questions that don't really need to be there. And yeah, I think you're right. It was adding into that storyline wrinkle that we're the official tag team of the Inner Circle that was decided by a match that has sort of added a lot of the confusion to this.
After that, we got part one of, I was going to say my favorite thing on the show, but I had eight different favorite things on the show. Definitely one of them. Matt Hardy said, hey, I just can't stop thinking about our win last week. It was great. How about we go out for drinks later? And Paige is like, Hangman Paige is like, I don't know. And he's like, the drinks are on me. And Paige's like, all right then, I'm there. And then Paige walks off to get his bag and he walks into the Dark Order. And it's just that awkward sort of, I'm just going to go for drinks with Matt now. But nice to see you. Oh, and John Silver I just wanted to reach through the screen and hug him.
And I've said this before, but because he looks like Pete, it makes it even harder to see his little heartbreak every single time.
It's very well done. There's more of that later.
Good. So lovely.
Then we got, I've not got much to say on this, other than Pac is great. This was an excellent squash match. Pac just came out and destroyed Ryan Nemeth for about 3 minutes.
Yep, I've got two notes, really, which is he knocks Nemeth out cold, still hit the Black Arrow and Brutalizer for the win. He basically had the match was over. He knocked him out. He's moving. He was oh, no, he's dead. I think I'll hit the Black Arrow then. That's probably more dead, so I'll lock in the Brutalizer instead.
Yeah, he was passed out. I love that Pac is a heel. He's just a bastard, but we love him for it. Ryan Nemeth interestingly tweeted out that he used to babysit for Brody Lee Jr. Brody Lee Jr. And he was in town, and it was, is it Amanda, Brody's wife? Yeah. She said, hey, why don't you do some wrestling for Dynamite? And, they hooked him up, and that's why he's done the last 2 weeks of TV.
Oh, nice. I didn't know that. That's cute.
Yeah, that's what he tweeted out after the show. Just lovely. Then we got highlights of the wedding from last week. And Miro said he's going to have his revenge. Cuts back to Orange Cassidy and Chucky T enjoying some champagne, being like, they should have guessed that Cassidy was going to come out the cake.
Of course I was going to come out the cake. Come on. Should have seen that a mile away. I thought Miro's promo was really good. It is still going, but I thought Miro's promo was very good.
I'm ready to see the end of this now.
Oh, me too, mate. Oh, Mr. Davis. Me too.
But while that, I'm trying to segue this. Will this work? While that has sort, I've exhausted my patience. Nah, it's not going to work. I really like the Acclaimed, is what I was going to say. Because when they first debuted and they were doing the rapping, I was like, cool, whatever. I don't know if it's working. Something happened on this show. Apparently they were great on Dark as well, which I haven't seen, but I'm going to watch that segment. They come out and they were amazing.
Mm-hmm. You want to talk about a team that's just come out just already feeling fully formed, where it's like, oh my God, you're already one of the best acts in the company. You've literally just walked through the door and you're like, here's our act. We're so different from everyone else. Here is how we're different from everyone else. And you're like, oh my God, you're just a fully formed team. And I love it. It's great.
Yeah. So they had a match against Jericho and MJF because was it Max Caster who lasted till the end of the Battle Royal with them the previous week?
Eliminated MJF, yeah.
And, MJF here, the story was, he is massively selling this gut punch. That one gut punch that Sammy gave him, he's got his ribs taped up. He's like, he's out of breath. He's really struggling to move around the ring. So it's pretty much Jericho doing most of the work here. Before the match started as well, there was a pre-match promo where Jericho was like, where's Sammy? Why isn't Sammy here? But he was doing it in such a concerned fatherly way. Not an angry heel mob boss way.
Yeah, it was really, really nice because he was like, because you know they had their match coming up, but MJF wasn't there, and then Santana and Ortiz come up, and they're like, he's literally just come out of the trainer's room, and he's like from a gut punch, and he comes at me with a big tape over him and everything. But I thought they did some, you know, they still did some nice like heel shenanigans within this match, including one of my favorite spots, one of my favorite heel spots, which is when you get someone in an abdominal stretch, and then you look over to your tag partner while the referee is distracted. You hold your hand out and they grab the hand. It's like, oh, and now it's on even tighter. Oh, no.
What worked about that so well? They used the corner cam. So it was like on the ring post. He was reaching out. That was so funny.
And there's at least one of my all-time favorite bits of that, which is when the referee spots them and the referee gives the big kick to the hands. They can do like the big, whoa, no. And then like the baby face and reverse it all. It's lovely heel stuff.
But the acclaimed pretty much worked face here, despite being a heel act. MJF overly selling the gut punch. A lot of weird dynamics in this, actually, that really, really worked. Jericho, though, I guess the argument is he is a former AEW world champion. He can pretty much beat the acclaimed single-handedly, but they gave him a good go at it, including a lion salt where he was hit with the boombox. So the acclaimed tried to cheat the win, but Hager interfered as well. Judas Elbow, Jericho and MJF win, but it was a good match, one that I actually thought the acclaimed might win on a few occasions.
Yeah, I thought it had some really nice near falls in all of this, but obviously the right team went over. They're the team that's going for the titles at Revolution. They should be the ones picking up the win here. So yeah, I thought this really, really worked as a whole segment. And then afterwards, Sammy Guevara comes out, like his music hits, and he walks in, and he's basically just like, I told you back in December that if anything happened again, I'm done. And something's happened, so I'm done. I quit. And when he said I'm done, there's like MJF, just who's standing behind Jericho, almost like just looks at Wardlow, we're like, nailed it, got him. And then he quits. And Jericho sold this really, really well, where Jericho was like, no, because you're like the founding member of the Inner Circle. And he was really sad about it. And like MJF was sort of trying to console him and stuff, but Jericho was just shrugging him off. Because he's lost one half of the sex gods. And it was a really, really nice moment for Jericho, and sort of like a fatherly moment where his son has walked away from him. And then Marvez tried to interview Sammy after the, you know, after the comeback from commercial break. And he's like, no, I just need to take some time away. I just need to take some time away from the Inner Circle, from this, from everything. And he just gets in the car and he drives off. So we're probably not going to see Sammy for a little while now. And then he can do the big sort of baby face return, I guess.
Yeah, I think, you know, if obviously you want Sammy around, but I think if you're going to do this storyline right, couple of months, yeah. Tell the story of MJF. You know, he's just like such an egotistical person. He needs to feud with someone. He will struggle with someone. And, you know, I think the next choice is going to be Jericho. He's going to start butting heads with him. What I found really interesting about this was how the rest of the Inner Circle seemed to side with MJF in the pre-match promo before the match. After the win, Santana was right on MJF, checking him, seeing if he's okay. In the bit where Sammy said that he's done, it felt like none of the other guys were going, oh no, stay, Sammy, stay. Like none of them did that apart from Jericho. So God, what did MJF say to them last week behind closed doors?
But it's not just what he said to them last week. It's all of the stuff he's been saying to them over the last couple of months since he joined. Like his plan has always been to get into their good books. You know, it was that segment he had with Santana and Ortiz talking about, you know, their relatives that have recently passed away and getting on their side. So he has manipulated them all to believe that he's right. And that Sammy's the real poison within the Inner Circle.
Yeah, it's great stuff. But yeah, I keep Sammy out for at least 3 months. MJF starts to attack Jericho, and you finally have that moment where all the Inner Circle are beating down Jericho. My heart's breaking as I'm picturing this in my head. And then Sammy's music hits, whatever it is, I can't remember. And he runs down for the save. It's just a shame you won't have many fans there to do that in front of, because this is, you know, this is a story that's been going from the start of Dynamite.
Yeah, it's a long old running story. Yeah, really, really long.
Really great. But then, you know, as if that wasn't enough, we cut backstage. Matt Hardy and Hangman Page are having drinks. They're knocking them back. They're having a good time. But every time Matt takes a drink, he actually chucks it on the floor. But he's playing it up like, oh, man, I'm so drunk. I've had so many drinks with you. This is great. You can really knock him down. Ah, go on, do it. Sign with me. Sign with the talent agency. I'll make you so much more money. And Paige is like, you know what? Sure. And he gets the contract. Hardy then looks at the camera, you know, this idea of explaining why the cameraman's there filming these intimate moments. And he says, maybe a bit too loudly for a stage whisper, the reason I've got you here is Hangman Page might wake up later and be angry. So I've got to show him this. So he actually has signed the contract, not under duress. But, and I did not see this until like I read about it afterwards. While Hardy's saying that to camera, Hangman Page switches out the contracts.
Did he? I didn't
see. Did you not see this either?
No, I didn't see it. I was so sad at the end of the segment because I was like, he signed the contract. I don't want him to sign the contract because Private Party can't get out of theirs. So I didn't spot that he switched over. That's so, oh man, that's actually made my day.
So yeah, Hardy doesn't know. He goes back. He's like, ah, yeah, great. You signed. So first of all, what amazing smart baby face booking. Paige isn't an idiot, even when he's drunk. You know, he knows that something's up with Hardy, especially like after the tag match last week when Hardy just stole that pin at the end from him. But what do you think Paige's contract is?
Oh, I don't know. I hadn't even thought about that. That it's actually, I just thought that maybe he just like flipped out for like a, you know, blank page or whatever it is. But no, he's actually, yeah, it's different. Oh, I'm going to plead the fifth on that one. I don't know what to say.
Surely a match at Revolution, singles match at Revolution.
Yeah,
or, that makes sense. Or you release Private Party. I wouldn't have that because I quite like heel Private Party. Or it's a six man of Matt Hardy and Private Party versus Hangman Page. He needs two guys to back him up. Silver Reynolds.
Yeah, that'd be really nice. Like for a zone for a six man. Because they're all teaming together next week. They're in an eight man with Hangman and Private Party with Matt Hardy. So I think we're going to find out next week what was actually on that contract. Or that's actually, you know what? I was looking forward to that match anyway because I wanted to see what the next step of this. I'm now way more looking forward to that match than I was at the start of this podcast review.
After this, we get the latest Sting interview. I don't get excited about Sting being...
Guess what? Team Taz were on the Titantron.
Yeah, they were. So, you know, every episode of Dynamite now starts with, and Tony Schiavone will be talking to Sting later. I'm like, who gives a crap now? He never says anything. It's always Team Taz interrupting, which is a shame because I thought this angle was actually really good. It cuts backstage after Taz interrupts before Sting's barely said a word. And what they've done, Team Taz, they've put Darby Allin in a body bag. They've tied that body bag to a car and they drive around the car park.
Yeah, this segment would have been so much more effective if every single week since December 2nd, we've not had a Sting segment where Team Taz interrupts or Sting interrupts a Team Taz segment. I've said this from the very get-go. I'm a broken record at this point. You putting Sting on TV every single week diminishes the value of Sting. And that's a shame. But you know what? It's not just true of Sting. It's true of all talent. Like that's why, and one of the AEW strength is that they are very restrained in putting out their talent every single week. FTR is one of the best tag teams they've got on roster. They're not on TV every single week. And that's fine because when they are on TV, it makes you want, I was like, oh, brilliant. FTR on TV next week. I better make sure I watch next week so I can see them wrestle. When you just keep saying Sting's on the show, Sting's on the show, Sting's on the show, Sting's on the show, and it's the same thing every single week, it's law of diminishing returns. And it has got to the point, I'm with you now, when they announce Sting is doing a segment with Tony Schiavone, like December 8th, I'm like, oh man, cannot wait to see that. Absolutely cannot wait to see that. February 10th, yeah, you know, I've seen it now. I've seen it for the past 10 weeks. So it doesn't have the same specialness that it once had.
Not terrible by a long shot, but I think a massive amount of missed potential to have Sting come back and he already feels like part of the furniture. And a hoodlum! What a hoodlum. Also, two other things that would have improved this segment. At the end of it, commentary is screaming, "Oh, and Sting's in hot pursuit." He walked. He walked very slowly off the stage.
Oh, but Mr. Davis, this is Sting. He walks with purpose. He's always in hot pursuit. He's getting away very slowly.
And the other thing was, as Jonathan Hedman pointed out to me earlier, Darby loves this stuff. He was making short films a couple of months ago about him being pulled around in a body bag. It tickles him.
He was having a brilliant time.
After that, we got Layla Hirsch versus Thunder Rosa in the first eliminated tournament match. I haven't actually got any notes for this. I just watched it and I enjoyed it. I really like Layla Hirsch. Thunder Rosa's great. Thunder Rosa won.
Yeah, really, really good stuff. I think the most interesting thing to talk about from this is that I'm guessing from the way that it was sort of advertised, because, you know, they're like, we've got the US side of things, we've got the Japanese side of things. Here's all the women that are going to be on the Japanese brackets, which we went over last week. And here's the matches that we're going to have within this tournament. But crucially, on the sort of announcement, they had Dynamite and they also had the YouTube logo with AEW's YouTube channel. Which makes me think then that all the Japanese matches are going to be on the YouTube channel like they were for the tag team elimination tournaments. Which,
as we expected.
Exactly. Which, like, we sort of thought they would either do truncated versions and they'll just show you highlights on Dynamite, which they may still do, but the full matches will be on YouTube. Part of me is just like, yeah, that totally makes sense. The other part of me is just like, that kind of sucks, because if it was a men's tournament, I don't think they would have had the same treatment of that. I think they would have shown, they'd have just shown all the matches.
I don't know. It depends. The reason, if you didn't watch last week's episode, the reason we thought they might do it this way is because TNT is nationally broadcast. It's got certain production standards. You can't just start putting on, you know, I don't know what they're going to be like the production of the Japanese matches, but it's not going to be the AEW production team filming them. Mm-hmm. So if they look exactly the same as an AEW match, then you probably should put those on Dynamite, but I suspect they won't. That's what they're concerned about. But yeah, I do hope they'll have edited versions. Otherwise, we'll be in the same problem as we are with Kenta, where we won't know who these people are. And that you would have built it up on YouTube, but that isn't the same audience that watches Dynamite on TNT.
Which Tony Khan knows. And we know that Tony Khan knows because he admitted this in an interview. Like, this is the interview he did after Full Gear, where it was like, yeah, I'm really like, I should have noticed this earlier, but we built all of the storyline between Nyla Rose and Hikaru Shida on Dark. But I should have realized that not everyone who's watching Dark is watching Dynamite. Or like, it's not the same. There isn't the exact same audience watching both shows. So that was a mistake that we had made. So my hope would be that you would learn from that mistake. Someone mentioned in the comments, apparently all of them are being shown on Monday as well. Like, so all four matches being shown then.
And finally, because we've already spoken about the main event, which was amazing, Jungle Boy's backstage with Tony Schiavone talking about FTR. Well, he cuts, I love Jungle Boy, so I just like him regardless, but it wasn't the strongest promo. It felt very wooden and sort of overly scripted. Some of the verbiage was a bit weirdly chosen. And ultimately, it was about Marco Stunt being kidnapped. And he didn't really seem to care that much.
Well, that's because Marco's fine. Like, they did say, Tony inside the interview said, like, we found out last week that he kidnapped him. Marco's okay, though, so that's really good to hear. So he's back and he's fine. At least I get that's what I took from this. So I think that's probably why he was then just, you know, focused on picking on FTR in his promo.
I didn't know if it doesn't really do anything for me, that stuff.
Do you know what, Davis? It was fine. It was absolutely fine.
Overall, though, I love this episode. I thought it was remarkable. Sammy leaving the Inner Circle, that main event, that opener, the Hangman Page stuff, like, it's a 4 out of 4, folks. But I've seen that the other 4 out of 4 shows were better. So it's a 3 out of 4 show? Help?
Oh, I mean, I think I'm with you on that. Like, I would have given this episode a 4 out of 5 because I loved that main event, but I would not give it a 5 out of 5. So going by that logic, then I should probably give it a 3 out of 4. I mean, I'm just going to look at what we put our poll up onto the WrestleTalk podcast channel to see what you all thought. And actually, 48% said All Elite. They gave it the 5 out of 5. So that's nearly 50% of the votes that it was a 5 out of 5 show, with 35% saying it was 4 out of 5. So that is like 85% of the vote thought it was 4 or 5 out of 5.
While we do the Patreon shout outs and have a vote in the community tab poll and join us over there. Go, everyone. How many people we got over there right now, Luke?
It's 769 people, so 1,000 of you are still over on the WrestleTalk channel. You've got one more week of it. Next week is the last week that these shows will be on there. So you can make the jump next week if you want, or you can make the jump now if you fancied it.
Make the jump now. But now, let's talk to our wonderful $25 a month or more pledge hammers on Patreon, who, along with everyone with a $5 a month or more pledge, will get the WrestleTalk extra review, about 3 hours worth of me and Luke talking about St. Valentine's Day Massacre, which had The Rock versus Mankind in a Last Man Standing match, Mr. McMahon versus Stone Cold Steve Austin in a steel cage, and the Giants' debut, Big Show, and one of the worst debuts ever.
Not only that, but we spent about the first hour of the show looking at all of like the wrestling news of the time, including, bearing in mind this is 1999, ECW's financial troubles and the worries that they might go out of business. And Dave Meltzer reviewing what he called the worst episode of Nitro in history. And it is just, we go through like his stream of consciousness that he has, where he felt like he had been taken to hell to watch nothing but Nitro for 24 hours and a match that he claimed lasted 6 whole weeks. It is a fabulous little read.
It was a really fun episode to record. But thank you to our $25 a month or more Patreons, Robert Spencer, period.
Woo. Yes, nice to get Cheap Pop along with it. The monster among Patreons, Brian Strowman.
The Vision, Adonis.
Oh, so beautiful. RoboCop.
Thank you. The Real Boss, Matt Robinson.
Here's someone who's been with us for a very long time. How do you like them apples, Marcel Jura?
Thank you, Marcel. Michael Jensen Radio.
Jensen, oh, radio. They drew first blood, not me, Grace Rambo.
Thanks, Grace. Nick, bitchin' kitchen.
Oh, he said the B word. That means it's serious. Tower of London, Nigel Morris.
That's a good name. You'll never get this name right, you idiots. Matthew Zimjewski.
Oh, very good. Talk about someone who's been with us for years. Like, he was with the Dagenham Studios. He's been with us. Former star athlete, now head coach, Len Del Brenson. Longtime Patreon backer.
Chris Petro says, hello, my friends. Smiley face. With Kenta, I feel that it's really smart of New Japan to promote the storyline with Mox on AEW TV, as they aren't able to do so in Japan. It helps them to build up the upcoming 26th of February match at the New Beginning USA show. I like it.
It is very smart doing it. And Mox did plug that date, you know, in his promo. I love that, because you had Mox plugging that date, and later on you had the Good Brothers plugging the Impact Hard to Kill pay-per-view. So it's like, it's very, very nice. Just like every now and again be like, hey, we're going to be at these shows on March 6th on pay-per-view.
We've got a lot of stuff about Sammy in the Inner Circle. Dan H, what if next week Sammy helps Proud and Powerful Santana and Ortiz win the gold, setting up the Revolution match versus Jericho and MJF? PNP is the real tag team, so them turning on the Ice Inner Circle tag team makes sense for me. Okay, let's jam that jam, because it's Thursday and you know what that means.
I think it's probably too early for them. Like, I don't think you want to be taking the belts off the Young Bucks at the moment. Like, that's not, like, the Inner Circle storyline doesn't need the belts.
Totally agree. Chuck Cassis, did anyone notice that Sammy walked to the ring through the heel entrance and left through the face entrance? Love the show. Jam that jam. WAP is crude. Hail the All Authority.
Wow, Chuck a banging song.
And a great pointing out Sammy X thing there. Yeah. Alexis Ebden, regarding the official tag team of the Inner Circle bit, have AEW actually acknowledged that? In my mind, that was the Inner Circle putting their own stipulation on the match so the AEW rankings and the Young Bucks don't see an official team.
That could very well be, but also, yeah, like maybe it's just an Inner Circle thing. But I mean, like they advertised it as that's what the stipulation of the match was. But yeah, like it's not you're right. It's not like an AEW recognized thing.
But it should be an Inner Circle recognized thing. Yeah. Good Dharma, who said heels versus heels don't work, should watch the Acclaimed versus MJF and Jericho to see how heels overheels the heels. How do you not love the storytelling of AEW from the Inner Circle perspective? Sammy is selfish and MJF from day one was caring. Someone on MJF's side there.
But that is, but that's the way that MJF has portrayed the whole thing. Love it.
Rangers Mayhem. Sammy heads to Impact and does some matches in the X Division. The matches against Chris Bay, TJP and Ace Austin would be amazing. Side note, Paige learned from Brody Lee to keep a roll of papers in your jacket. That's nice.
That's beautiful. That's really nice. Yeah, I feel a few people say that Sammy could go to Impact. Be quite interesting.
Sammy to New Japan, mix it up in the Super Juniors. Myron Speed, refreshing to see some smart characters for a change. Hangman making sure Hardy signed the switched contract and Sammy taking the initiative to leave the Inner Circle before they turned on him. I popped for Sammy leaving through the babyface entrance.
Yeah, really, really nice touch that.
James Hanley, with the Acclaimed, I can never tell if I dislike them because they were heels and I was supposed to dislike them, or if I dislike them just in general. Last night they went against MJF and I realised the former was true.
Yes, like that very nicely. Steve Guzman says, this episode was fantastic. I've really grown to love the Acclaimed. The entrance is one of the best in AEW. The Matt Hardy Hangman segment was great. And dear God, Kenta's double foot stomp. Love AEW. Hope y'all are well. Stephen, thank you very much. Matthew McFadden, I saw this on Twitter, so can't take credit for it, but where did Hangman Page learn to keep rolled up papers in his jacket? Also, this episode was fantastic from start to finish. My favorite since Winter Is Coming. Fantastic main event.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it was a great show. I thought the TV specials that they've done were probably above it, though.
Yeah, I'd agree. Gabriel Caruso, do you think that AEW will book Santana and Ortiz at the top of the tag division again, or Pentagon Phoenix as the top of the card stars? I feel like those four guys got left at the wayside, even though they're in constant exposure. I want them to have title runs.
I mean, you're talking to the converted Gabriel. It should have been Pentagon, Phoenix, and Santana and Ortiz all the time.
Yeah, we're still early doors of AEW. There's still very much time to do this. But at the same time, I also agree with you because I'm like, but why? But why not Penta? James Hanley, for Valentine's Day, I hope everyone has someone in their lives who talks about them the same way JR talks about picture in picture.
Oh, my restaurant quality girlfriend.
Good Dharma, 3 out of 4. 3 out of 4? What? 3 out of 4? WTF Ollie wants from AEW. This wasn't a special episode, but felt so special to me. Maybe it's because I'm into most of the storylines. The main event looks amazing with all the belts and the briefcases. 4 out of 4 for me. I enjoyed it so much.
Fair play to you. Yeah, like I said, it's a 4 out of 4 show. Sorry, it's a 4 out of 5 show, but it's just the limits of Twitter.
Nate S, what if the contract Hangman signed out was a Dark Order contract they used to use and a Hangman just signed as a witness or something, trying to make amends with Dark Order by giving them a new member in Matt Hardy?
Maybe. I mean, they did interact with each other when he was going backstage.
Yeah. And Matt Hardy was going to be it was the original plan to be the leader of the Dark Order before they realized that it was probably too obvious. Everyone had figured it out, so they made it to Brody Lee instead. Bacon Rasher, afternoon, lads. Question for today. Hope you're listening, Luke. Sawyer says, no, I'm kidding. Which comes first, Omega defenses AEW title or challenges for a different title? On the whole, AEW a top show again, and NXT was great too. Vengeance Day has a great card. Jam that jam.
Yeah. I think he defends his AEW title first at Revolution. Surely we're getting maybe a Lance Archer match, I reckon, at this point.
That's probably a good shot, actually. Yeah, with him, I loved that. Like all three of them, it's taking three people to hit the one winged angel. I thought it was a really nice touch. Sawyer said, should AEW have commentary simply shoot explain to viewers that the nature of the business prevented them revealing John Moxley's work and title in New Japan up until now, and recent developments have lifted those restrictions, or were that exposed too much?
I don't think you have to do the shoot version. You can just say, look, here's what Moxley won at the start of last year before the pandemic. Just explain it like that.
Tom Daniels, hi guys. First ever WrestleTalk Super Chat. In my opinion, the reason why Proud and Powerful versus the Young Bucks is great is because one, Proud and Powerful eliminated the Bucks in the Battle Royal. Two, the Good Brothers used Proud and Powerful in the Inner Circle to take heat off themselves. Three, it's Proud and Powerful versus the Young Bucks. I mean, that last point is correct, though, really, isn't it?
That's a good one, yeah.
Yeah. Just, Johnny, I was watching the Gun Club's AEW Instagram story where they recorded snippets during Dynamite from the crowd. While PAX's entrance was happening, one of the wrestlers in the crowd said, wait, so PAX's a face now in the distance?
He's a bastard. He needs his own entrance. And he needs to come up from the stage like a gremlin.
Like Cody does. Like, why does Cody get the middle entrance? That should be PAX's thing, the bastard entrance. Gabriel Caruso, I just realized that Money Matt gimmick is a Vince McMahon parody. I don't think it's a Vince parody. It's a Mob Boss parody. No, I don't think it's either of those as a parody. I never thought it was a Vince McMahon thing. It's just like Mick Money Matt's been a character he's done for many years.
The contract stuff is riffing on WWE's recent contract negotiations with talent because there's been the stuff with the third parties, yeah.
Yeah, but my point was Big Money Matt's been around for eons at this point. Leon Quashy, going to bet that Shaq cuts a promo mocking Cody's torn rotator cuff by the end of next week.
I guess today is the inside base basketball day.
And baseball. Yep, he does the baseball, right? Touchdown. New Punk Rand says, I loved Dynamite. All the stories are great to me. The Inner Circle might be my favorite one. I love the acclaim. Just bring back Juventud Guerrero free the juice. Everyone's got to have their hill to die on.
Wrestling talk sign guy. I think one of the first things that started killing WCW was the NWO destroying everyone each week, where you stopped expecting anything else and the actual promotion looked weak and stupid. At what point do you think the Bullet Club Elite gets too powerful?
I would say with the NWO thing, because it was happening on every single week, and it was like they would beat up 40 guys like in the process. At this point, they were only beating up like one or two guys. And also like it was 40 guys every single week for 3 years. So I don't think I do think there could be a point where that happened, but I would like to think, perhaps this is me putting too much hope and hope, you know, too much hope on one company, but I'd like to think they would know it was getting stale before. Like they, you know, and they stopped doing it. You know what I mean?
Plus, they give so much to the other guys in the match. It's a very different dynamic. The Jam one, Ryan B. Jam. Potential crossover matches I now want to see. Part one, Cobb versus Darby. Suzuki versus Miro. Yes.
I love that one.
Osprey versus Pac. Ishimori versus Jungle Boy. G.O.D. versus LAX. Jay White versus Hangman Page. Kenta versus Penta. Leo Rush versus Phoenix. Sabre Jr. versus Kingston. This show was so good.
He continues.
And again, Dream Matches Part 2. Yano versus Jericho. Okada versus Cody. Ibushi versus Mox. Naito versus Starks. Hiroshi versus MJF. Evil versus... Orange Cassidy. Hiromu versus Sammy. Ishii versus Dustin. And Sonata versus Scorpio Sky. Also give me Pac and Phoenix versus Good Brothers at Revolution for the Impact Tag Titles.
Oof, there's a lot of good matches on there. Yeah, a lot of great matches on there. I particularly like Yano versus Jericho. I think that would be really, really fun, actually. And like Ibushi Mox had one of my favorite matches from last year's G1, or the year before's G1, rather.
Leon Quashy, I would be down with a match of the day style recap of the Japanese women's bracket on Dynamite. Also, NXT was great. Cameron Grimes may now be my new favorite character on Wednesday nights. Damn, I praise the opposition. Gonna miss out on my Khan coin. Have you heard about Grimes' new gimmick?
I actually haven't seen it yet, but I know that Brian Alvarez called it the best promo of the decade. So I'm really looking forward to watching it at some point.
He put all his money in GameStop. Made a fortune and then put all that money in cryptocurrency and made even more a fortune, and he's now the richest man in the world. Brilliant.
That's so good.
Bacon Rasher. Hold on, Mr. Davis. Sting talks every week. Same as Edge currently. That young up and start going to Mania as a big new star. Goldberg goes away, then comes back for something and you get mad. Sting talks every...
So what you're saying there is that you're complaining because Sting talks on TV every week, but Edge is also talking on TV every week. Plus, and on top of that, we got mad that Goldberg went away and then came back. So, like, you can't have it both ways. You can't have someone on TV every week. You can't be mad at someone talking on TV every single week. You also can't be mad for people only showing up every now and again.
Well, I think people keep misunderstanding the Goldberg-Edge problem, and that's they're going for the main title.
Well, yes, I know, but they're also, like, I think some people just see it as black and white. And also, like, I think there's a very different thing between sort of the Goldberg-Edge thing, as well as the difference between the Goldberg-Sting thing as well. I don't think that, but I still stand by don't have Sting on TV every week.
Hmm.
Zachary Jenkins says, guys, thanks for getting me into AEW. I may be an NXT mark, but I'm a wrestling fan first. But can we talk about how we might get a 5-star this weekend on NXT with Gargano versus Kushida and Balor versus Dunn? Balor versus Dunn, by the way, I'm super excited for. Like, Gargano versus Kushida has got, like Zachary's said then, 5 stars written all over it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Gargano Kushida is going to be amazing, but Balor versus Dunn. Christ alive. Because I love Kushida. Oh. I love the way he works, but character-wise, he never really grabs me. But Balor and Dunn.
Yes, please, mate. Burt Wayne, True Heel Heat merges with the official partner of Mission Pro Wrestling, Gorilla Press, for Thunder Roses, Mission Pro Wrestling's Empty Promises, March 20th, 2021. Stay tuned for more details. Add up to, there have been 6 IWGP US champions, and 4 of them are now in AEW. Can you name them all? Was Cody, Kenny, Mox,
Chris Jericho.
Yeah, and 4 of them are in AEW now, so that's the 4.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, that was easy.
we've actually held Cody's United States Championship belt. We were in the ring with him, with Brandy. And lastly, the Zorni said, just wanted to donate. What's your t-shirt size?
Butch. Obviously, it's medium. thank you very much for the thought, but we're not really sort of accepting any gifts sent to us because we're not in the office. It's hard to keep track of COVID, yada, yada, yada. But thank you very much for the thought. Become a Patreon. That's the best way to help support us. But that's all we've got time for today. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We went over an hour again. Remember,
It was Archer, not Jericho. Jericho wasn't the champion. Jericho was Intercontinental Champion.
Of course. Okay, well done.
Can I show you something that I think will possibly blow your mind?
Always.
And even as I said, I don't think it will. Like, it's either going to blow your mind or you're going to look at it and be like, huh, yeah, it's interesting. It might not even say it's interesting. It might even be just the latter half of, you know, the first half of that latter option. But long-term listeners will know that I recently had to go to the dentist and have a tooth taken out because it had split. And so I just had to have the whole thing removed. So I've now got a gap where a tooth used to be. So the other day I went to go to the dentist because it had been a month since I had it taken out just to see how I was getting on. He asked the question, you know, does it hurt? I said, no, it doesn't. It just felt like I'd burnt the roof of my mouth on pizza for a little bit. And then after that, it just completely healed. Now it's fun. I don't even notice. I'm actually chewing on both sides of my mouth again. He said, have you managed to get a peanut stuck in there yet? And I said, no, not yet. It hasn't happened. And I've been eating peanuts. But, so we went to go and have a checkup. Now, this tooth has been troublesome to me because I had to have a filling in it, then I had to have a root canal in it, then I had to have it taken out. And that's annoying because all of my other teeth are fine. Do you know how I know they're fine? Because my dentist said, oh, your other teeth are fine. Absolutely nothing he's doing, apart from the hygienist. But I'm pretty sure that's a long con that all dentists do to you know, just get more money in there. Always make you go see the hygienist. And I also know because I'm going to share my screen. They did a 3D scan of my teeth.
Right, I can see your smiling mashers in 3D here.
They literally had a lady just like basically just move this thing around my mouth, and they took a scan, like a live image scan that was rendering out in real time of my teeth rather than just doing an X-ray. And this is like, look, this is my mouth. You can even see there, that's the chip I've got on my front tooth.
Yeah, I know the chip.
There's the
wow, and there's the missing one.
Yeah. I can even go like
stuff my hole.
I can even see like the view of my mouth from the POV of my tongue. Like,
what, oh, that's what your tongue sees. Wow.
Yeah. Oh, I was kind of sort of blown away by this. I can like zoom in, I can zoom out. Look how cool this is.
Yeah, not the most audio friendly content, is it?
Well, no, obviously not. I can separate them out. There's the upper.
There's just the upper teeth. Wait, whoa, 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 whoa. What's that in the bottom right? Does that say Invisalign?
Invisalign. I think that's the company. Yeah, why?
Are you going to get Invisalign?
No, what's Invisalign?
Invisalign are fancy, luxury, expensive braces that push people's teeth into place, but only over the course of about 2 to 3 months. And they are almost naked, almost invisible to the naked eye.
Mm-hmm. I'm not know this. I think this was just the company that they were using to do like the teeth scan thing. But it was like,
that's where it's going. You're talking about the hygienists going to upsell you. They're going to picture an Invisalign. They're going to go, are you happy with your tooth being 1 millimeter out? And you'd be like, yeah, it's 1 millimeter. And then they go, okay. And then that's the seed that's planted in the root of your subconscious. And you'll notice that tooth over and over again, like my bottom tooth. You see that?
Mm-hmm.
See the bottom row? How it's just there's one that's not in line with all the others. I didn't think about it. It's fine.
One of the things that he did say, because he said, like, have you thought about getting something to replace where the gap is? And I said, not really, because it doesn't hurt at the moment. He said, that's fine. I wouldn't give it any thought for another 6 months to a year yet anyway. But it is something you do want to talk about. And he went through the options with me again of what he can do. And I was like, yeah, I think about it. It's quite expensive. So, I'll certainly give it some thought. He's like, I mean, I certainly would, because I have seen some cases where, because there's now a gap there, the tooth that's below it isn't getting any resistance. Nothing's stopping it anymore. So it could just grow upwards.
What? Teeth don't do that, surely?
Well, that's what I thought. But he was like, yeah, he goes, yeah, no, I've seen it happen.
No, he's having you on.
I thought he was. This is why I was like, this is how you're trying to get me to get a cap, isn't it? Or you're trying to get me to get like an implant or something to stop a tooth growing into a monster tooth.
If you're telling me, that if I walk around with my mouth open for 6 months, my teeth are going to get longer.
To a year.
I don't believe it. No, that's, it sounds like it could happen, but it also sounds like that particular kind of gallows humor that dentists often have, where you can't tell if they're joking or not.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Did he look like he was joking?
Oh, no, he was 100% serious the whole time.
Maybe it's a cool look, though. A sort of wrestler would kill for a back fang. They could build a whole gimmick around it.
It's difficult to see, though. Like, people who've watched the video version of this will have noticed that no one has spotted the fact that I've got a missing tooth at the moment, because it's so far back in my mouth.
Well, that's the purpose of the Titantron. So when you come out, the Titantron would just be that 3D render of your mouth and your teeth.
With the one big tooth.
Yeah. What would the entrance music be? Just a drill?
Well, that was Isaac Yankum's entrance.
Yeah,
it was
just
like,
like
that sort of thing. How good that impression was. It was actually pretty impressive.
What could you have there?
What, and to replace it? An implant?
Yeah.
Which would basically just be a fake tooth that would go in there. A denture would go in there, but obviously I've got to have like, almost like a mouth brace for that. Or what's the other one? There's like another one as well, which basically is just like they call it a bridge, which basically just sort of like sits. Mm. It actually puts like fake teeth to actually. I mean, I know someone did DM me, also send me a message on Twitter to be like, please don't tell any more dentist stories because I'm trying to weep while I listen to this podcast and it makes me feel a bit queasy. But to put a bridge on, they have to shave down the other teeth, like by half, so they can put like essentially fake bottoms onto that teeth and then attach the middle one that's going to replace the gap. And it was like, I know it sounds backwards because you're essentially taking away two teeth to replace one.
Yeah. Yeah, it does sound backwards. It sounds like the exact sort of stuff that we'll look back on in 50 years and go, they did that in dentistry, but now we've just got the holographic teeth that easily fit in there. Have I told you about my veneers story?
No. I think so.
I accompanied a family member when they went to get veneers because they were afraid. And I sat in the operating room with them reading comics. And halfway through the procedure, so about an hour in, do you know what they do to fit veneers? It's very similar to what you just described, but to have the, you know, the fake teeth, the veneers fitted to your actual teeth, they don't shave down the teeth. They file them into jagged points.
Ooh,
so you can just slot the teeth in. And the person getting it done sort of sat up and they're a bit woozy from the drugs. And they said, how do I look? Kind of oblivious. They smiled at me, a mouth full of bloody filed down teeth. And I couldn't hide my surprise and horror. Just, oh my God, you look fine. Oh God. Oh my God, you look fine. It's okay. It's okay. It's only an hour left. Does it have to be a fake tooth, though, that you're getting there? Couldn't you have maybe a wireless radio?
I mean, that wasn't an option that my dentist presented to me. But I mean, if anyone wants to message, actually, do you know what? We've got a pretty, you know, we've got a wrestling following here. I'm going to ask everyone to send Dr. Britt Baker a message on Twitter. If that tooth story is true. Like, just all like, just don't tag us. Don't tag WrestleTalk. Don't tag either one of me and Ollie. Just ask. Like, if everyone asks, I've heard this story about teeth just constantly growing if there's no tooth above it. Is there any truth to that? If all of a sudden she just goes into a Twitter mentions and there's like 50 people who've all asked the same question, do you think she'll go like, I should answer at least one of them and then we'll know?
But do tag us. Do that. Look, we're bad at this social media game. We could go viral. That's what the companies say, isn't it?
No, but don't tag us because then she'll know that it's a wrestling thing. Like if we're positioning this as like I've just got a dentist question.
I think you want to put something useful there. You can turn your mouth into some kind of Swiss Army mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Giggle. A little can opener. That's probably what you were using your teeth for anyway.
Legit friend of mine, Splat at university, used to open Splat. Up bottle. Splat, he used to
rejected
open up
rejected retribution member.
Yeah, he used to open up beer bottles with his mouth. He's basically just be like, no one's got a bottle open. He found a good like, just bite it off and hand it back to you.
How did you chip your front tooth? Was I there?
No. This was when I was a kid. It was during swimming lessons, in fact, and I had to. One of the swimming things to get a badge was to swim down to the bottom of the pool, grab a brick, and then swim back up to the surface.
Not a real brick, but like a sort of float brick.
The float brick things that sink to the
bottom. Not a brick from a house.
No, and then you throw it, hold it up and be like, got the brick, or you have to swim to the end or something along those lines. Anywho, I don't know why. I got it into my head that I'd have to have my eyes closed, otherwise the water and the chlorine is going to get into my eyes. So I just dove down to the bottom of the swimming pool with my eyes closed, and I found the bottom of the swimming pool with my mouth. And I just chipped my tooth on the floor of the swimming pool. I was lucky that it's only tiny. Like, it's only a tiny chip.
Ouch. Mm. Well, I'm sure the people who hated us talking about dentistry last time are loving this.
And that is all we've got time for on this edition of the WrestleTalk podcast. Thank you all so much for listening. I'm back tomorrow with Denise Salcedo doing the magazine show and your Patreon mailbag questions. And then Randy and Pete will be back for the third most listened to podcast. the fourth most listened to podcast in the WrestleTalk podcast pantheon. Thank you all so much for listening. Take care. I love you. Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitor monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.